Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns and this is my podcast for outdoor folk. One of the things that happens to me a lot, people often ask me how I maintain my svelte-like physique. Actually, that's not true. No one ever asked me that. I haven't got a svelte-like physique. But what I've started doing recently, I go out every morning. I've sentenced myself to this. I go out every morning on my bike and I cycle for half an hour. Then I come back and have my breakfast. And I have to say, that's really setting me up for the day. I really recommend you do that. That's got me sort of interested in cycling generally. And so my guest today is a cyclist and a writer and an authority on cycling. And what I've done before this podcast, I've asked a few people, you know, what questions they've got, and there's a few questions I'd like to ask. So my guest today has written a book, 1001 Cycling Tips. So there can't be much she don't know about cycling. And so I'd just like to introduce you to Hannah Reynolds. Hello, Hannah. How are you?
Hi, John. Really nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me along.
No, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. Just ask it, how did you start to get really, you're obviously someone who cycles a hell of a lot and really knows a lot about it. What really got you committed in cycling?
I think it was, well, it happened in stages. When I was a child, I was growing up in the New Forest and my mum was actually really anti-cycling. Sadly, she'd lost a cousin to a cycling accident when he was quite young. So she was very determined that we wouldn't have bikes at all as children. And it took a long time. I was about 14 before I even learned to ride a bike. And it was actually my dad who persuaded my mum that, you know, it's only fair to teenagers to have bikes, because that's how you get around at that age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you go off for bike rides. And it was really my first taste of independence. So I think cycling at 14 and as a teenager was about travel and getting around. And, you know, we used to ride around the forest, but we didn't really call it mountain biking or brand it as anything. It was just like hacking around the forest with your mates on bikes, you know. And then I went to university and I did a sports science degree, which was an odd choice because I wasn't really into the type of sport that people who do sports science do. It was all kind of like chasing after balls of various different shapes or hitting them with rackets or sticks or bats or something. So I felt quite out of place. And then I met a bunch of cyclists who were also unable to kick or hit a ball and were very into cycling, road cycling, mountain biking. And they sort of took me under their wing and I was like, right, I found a sport now that I understand. You know, it's about travel and being outside and having a laugh with your mates and, you know, not standing around on a muddy field somewhere. So since probably 18, I'd call myself a cyclist. And before that, I was someone who, knocked around on bikes.
Oh, wow. OK, that's quite interesting that you got into it relatively late then.
Yeah, it felt relatively late when I was 18 and I was hanging around with people who, I mean, one of them had just come back from racing the worlds as a mountain biker.
Oh, right. Oh, wow.
He'd been, you know, he'd been cycling since he was like tiny and probably racing since he was like 9 or 10. So it did feel late then. But now I'm in my 40s. I've realised that actually cycling's a sport you can pick up at any age. And I've met people who've learned to ride bikes in their 30s, 40s, 50s, mm-hmm. who have become, like yourself just then, you've started a cycling habit now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like at 18, it felt late, but at 43, it feels like I got started quite young.
So that's what I've got now, a cycling habit. That sounds like something I should go and have therapy for, doesn't it, really? Now then, I've asked around to get a few questions, and I've got a question here from Derek Williams, who's a cycling campaigner. He comes from Norwich, and I believe he's the bane of Norwich County Council's life, because fights for better cycling paths and better access for cyclists. And obviously, he's asking what I think is a general question, but something that concerns all cyclists. What sort of safety tips do you think that are the most important? What jumps out at you for following, to keeping yourself safe on a bike?
There's so many different things, and as talking, you know, to a cycle campaigner about it, I'm sure he's got lots and lots of great advice, probably more so than I do. But personally, for myself, I feel that what keeps me safe on the road is having awareness and confidence on a bike. So I've spent a few years riding bikes and I feel quite confident in my skill level. So when I'm cycling, I'm not worried about things like taking my hands off the handlebars so I can indicate clearly to people around me.
Right.
I'm happy to like look over my shoulder and do like a really clear shoulder check. And, you know, if necessary, give the evil eye to the person behind me and make sure that we've made that eye contact and they know I'm in front of them. And I know that they know I'm in front of them, if you see what I mean. And having that sort of 360 degree awareness of what's going on around you. And I think it comes with experience, and also it comes with being confident in your skills, because it frees up energy, if you like, to be aware of other things. If you're very nervous on your bike and you're worried about, you know, things like steering or taking your hand off the bars or feeling generally uncomfortable, then it's hard to have the kind of extra awareness on top of that. So I think the fundamental to keeping yourself safe on the road is skills and confidence for yourself, and then just, unfortunately, total vigilance all the time, checking and double checking everything you're doing, looking around, listening. You know, I used to commute in and out of London a lot, and you start to have this really kind of funny intuition about the type of driver you've got behind you. You know, you like hear their engine noise or their acceleration or
how fast
they approach you, and you start to make judgments, and that does come through experience. For people who are new to cycling, of course, they need to build that experience up. So I think my advice to someone starting completely new and to think about their safety on the road would be to look at route planning. And as a cycle campaigner, I'm sure he's got lots of thoughts on that. But the route and where you choose to ride your bike is really important to your safety. And one thing I've noticed talking to newcomers is that you, at first, if you're a car driver or you're used to being on a bus or something, you tend to ride your bike where on the routes you know, and they might not be the best places to ride your bike. You know, you could go one street to the side and be riding down a residential road with speed bumps rather than being on the busy road where you're having to kind of assert yourself in amongst traffic. So there's loads of great apps that can help you plan a route, and things like Komoot and Sustrans, both of those have got apps that can help you to identify where other cyclists ride. And that's likely to give you, you know, like a safe experience and like a place that's pleasant for riding your bike.
Right. Commute. I'll put a link to those on the page.
Yeah, that's great, because it's crowdsourced information. So So if I go into a city, like say I'm cycle touring or on holiday or whatever, and I want to cycle from A to B, then you can look at what cyclists living in that city are doing and how they're getting around. So you can kind of work out where the most used cycle routes are, and they're most likely to be the ones that are going to be the safest and most enjoyable to be on.
That's really interesting, because I mean you certainly it there's a very different perspective cycling through routes as a cyclist than there are as a motorist. I suppose one of the issues I find is pedestrians tend to, basically quite a lot of the time, just step off the road in front of you without looking. That happens quite a bit. If you ring your bell, they look at you as if you really insulted them. But I'm trying not to run them down. What's your relationship with pedestrians like then?
Oh, that is such a challenging one. Sometimes I've rung my bell and someone's gone, oh, you know, I jumped out my skin. Oh, you made me jump. And
that's right. Yeah.
And then you don't ring your bell and you just go, morning, really cheerful and friendly. And someone goes, where's your bell? So, you know, it's hard to know what to do. I always feel that if someone was coming up behind me, a cheery, friendly, good morning, or, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of a friendly approach, at least you know that they're slowing down and they're, you know,
yes
kind of accommodating you. Whereas a bell, a bit like a horn, it doesn't tell you anything about the person, does it? Like
No,
someone could
that's
be.
right. That's a very good point, that. Yeah. People seem to regard it as an aggressive thing, but it's actually not. You're just saying, look out, I'm here. You know?
Exactly. But obviously, I guess the thing for pedestrians and cyclists, we're so vulnerable on the roads, and sometimes people can react defensively or aggressively because they're frightened and they're uncomfortable. But, and I'm sure that's like if someone's about to step out in front of you, you haven't got time to be polite. Sometimes you
That's
shout,
right. That's
and
right.
then that's upsets the person who's been shouted at. So yeah, it is a tricky one. Bells are great. And really useful, but sometimes I have found that a cheery hello actually gets you a nicer response. But there's no.
That sounds really good. I'll try that next time I'm out. Oh, also, one of the things that's happens to me is, the areas that are supposed to be cycle friendly sometimes, but you've got one way streets and there's some one way street. It's quite confusing because I never realized this as a motorist, but some one way streets, actually a cyclist is allowed to cycle against the traffic. Some one way streets, you're not. And you'll get the odd glare or the horn blown out of you for doing something actually you're entitled to do, but people don't know. Does that happen to you?
Yeah, it happens. I think that happens to a lot of cyclists, and it's a cause of a lot of frustration and friction because you really want to be able to sit that driver down and explain things to them, but of course you can't, and
It's
they're
gone.
gone, and that moment's happened, and it can really stay with you for the rest of the day sometimes. You feel like you're really put out that you've been told off for something that you were absolutely in your right to be able to do. I actually put in the book a section called quick-witted answers,
All
so
right,
you can
okay.
almost kind of memorize them so they're there on the tip of your tongue when someone says something to you, because there's so many misconceptions
Yes,
around
there are.
what you're allowed to do on the road, whether you're allowed to cycle two abreast, whether, like you said, the example of some one-way streets you can go up and some you can't, whether you have to wear a helmet. There's a lot of drivers will shout out the car window, put a helmet on if you're not a helmet wearer. So yeah, I tried to come up with a few of the most common ones, like the answer to you don't pay road tax. I mean, well, no, neither do you, mate. But it's kind of it's just there's so many sources of friction, and I think all we can do as cyclists is try and stay calm and level-headed as much as possible, and when we get the opportunities, try and set the record straight and help drivers know what's going on the roads, and that
That's
explain
pretty
that
good.
sometimes when you're like I said before, when you shout or you're upset or you swear at a driver, it's not because you're a naturally aggressive, horrible, entitled person, but
No.
actually it's a little bit scared because they're in a really big, heavy vehicle and you're not.
That's right. They make a mistake. It's you that gets injured, and they get their paint scratched. You know, it's a
Exactly.
bit of a different thing, really, isn't it? Hey, I got another question. It's sort of safety related. It's from John Barton, who's he's an organ grinder from Sheffield, and he's asking me. He's got a bit related to what you said earlier, actually, about he's got a teenage son. And you know what teenagers are like. They tend sometimes to be a little bit overconfident and a bit too cocky. I get, I mean, you can't wet nurse people, but well, maybe is there something if you had a teenage son who you thought was maybe a bit reckless, what would your advice be?
Well, my first thought is get him into some kind of like cycling club or organized cycling
All
activity. I
right,
where
okay.
I live, there's an absolutely brilliant cycling club called Kendal CC, and they've got a kind of a junior section where they take them mountain biking into skills tracks, and they have them racing. They have so much kind of opportunity to develop their cycling skills and kind of develop their sort of cycling awareness generally. And I think if you're getting all of your kind of, I don't know, your adrenaline and your testosterone and your growth hormones, let's face it, with teenagers, they got a lot going on.
Yeah, you've got a lot going on.
You know, like racing with your mates in a safe environment, maybe you've got a bit more space to be a bit more cautious and careful when you're on the road. And it's also that whole thing with parenting. I've got a three-year-old, so I'm a long way from the teenage years yet. But that riding together and leading by example, so they can see what good, safe practice on the road looks like, because they're riding with someone who's showing that. But God, parenting, it's difficult, isn't it?
Now, that sounds like a really down-to-earth, practical solution to that, to be honest, because when you know, your mom always tells you to be careful, doesn't she? And you always ignore that. So, but if other people tell you to be careful, that is quite handy, or your peers do. That's good. Another question. This is getting right down to the fundamentals. How do you stop getting a sore bum?
Oh, classic. Yeah, it's one of those things with cycling, and I think anyone who's ridden a bike a lot
has
been in discomfort. So there's a few things. There's one, you shouldn't have to say it, but good hygiene, like get out of your cycling shorts the minute you finish your ride, have a shower, use some soap, get rid of all the bacteria, because there's lots of pretty yucky stuff lives around your backside and in your shorts, and grinding motion of being on your saddle can mean that some of that bacteria can get into the skin, and that can cause saddle sores. So yeah, keep dry, wash with soap, dry the area properly, allow it to air dry if possible, bit of wandering around after the shower with a towel around your waist rather than getting back into your clothes. Creme, like you use on a baby's bum when they get natural rash, that works really well for clearing stuff up.
Okay.
Some people like to use chamois cream, which is basically an emollient to kind of let your shorts and your saddle slide against the skin. It gives a bit of cushioning, a bit of slip, and that stops the kind of friction that can damage the surface of your skin. So that's really handy. Proper cycling shorts, so with a chamois, with a kind of people don't call them chamois anymore, they're not made of deer skin, but you know, the kind of padded insert.
Yeah.
And it bears saying, don't wear anything underneath them. They are next to skin, so no knickers, no pants, no nothing, just go commando. Shorts are a next to skin thing. And if you're still persistently getting saddle sores, also your bike setup. So what saddle you're riding.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that I've got a pair of cycling shorts with the, you know, those sort of gel inserts.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were supposed to be next to your skin. There you are.
Well, there you go.
I've learned something already. which is quite an achievement itself, to be quite honest. One of the problems I'm having, I have persistently, I'm not the lightest of people. And I find both, I've got a road bike and I've got a mountain bike, and I find that after a while, you know, leaning forward on the holding the handlebars, that it sort of cuts the circulation off in my hands, and my hands start to go numb. Is there a way I can get around that?
It's another thing that's really common in cyclists.
Right.
It's called cyclist palsy, and you normally get it in your little finger and your ring finger, because there's a nerve that comes down sort of through the ulnar side of your forearm. And when your arm's flexed and on the bars, you pinch it a little bit and you get numbness in those two fingers. You can get numbness in your whole hand as well. And often the cause of that is bike setup. So
I did wonder about that. Yeah, go on. Yeah.
Well, if you're leaning too much weight forward onto your handlebars, or your wrists are kind of like kinked awkwardly, then that can cause it. So the first thing is to get your bike setup checked. Make sure that the reach between your saddle and your handlebars is right, that you're not leaning down too much.
Tell us a little about that. Sorry, how does that work? So I would go in the bike by a bike shop and say, "Can you set my bike up for me?" Is that right? What would they do?
Okay, so at a basic level, someone who's experienced in cycling, someone in your local bike shop could probably have a quick look over and go, "Oh, you know, you might find it more comfortable just like rolling your bars around so you're not reaching so far for the brake levers. Or you might need a shorter stem or to move your saddle forward a little bit." So they might, at a very basic level, if there's a massive problem with your bike that they can quickly see, then someone with experience might be able to, in your shop, just sort it out. If it needs deeper investigation, there are people who are specialist bike fitters, and they will help to kind of customise your bike fit. There's a really good saying that a friend of mine, Phil Burr, he was a physiotherapist to Team Sky and British Cycling. He says the human body is adaptable, but your bike is adjustable. So you can put your saddle up and down, you can move your bars forwards and backwards, but your body will adapt to different positions in different ways. So it's twofold. Go to your bike shop, say this is the problem. They might be able to help you out. You might need to go a little bit further for investigation. But it's really common. And you can also, things like padded gloves, nice kind of bar tape on your road bike or squishy grips on your mountain bike, that can all help. Because it's vibration as well for some people, you know, the kind of just like the constant going over bumps and bad roads.
That makes sense. See, for me, it seems to be worse on my road bike than it is on my mountain bike. I don't know why that is. I suppose the mountain bike has bigger grips, doesn't it? Maybe that spreads the weight a little bit. So another problem that a problem that until recently sort of stopped me cycling in the winter, really, was because I live in Inverness, and there is some fantastic cycling here. But the only problem is that we're in a sort of a valley, obviously, and you have to sort of cycle up a pretty steep and pretty long hill to get out of the sort of the glen, you know, the sort of dip or the bowl, I suppose, that Inverness is in. And in cold weather, I wheeze and puff and sweat my way up there. In fact, pretty much all cycling, I wheeze and puff and sweat. But that's fine. You get up and you're dripping sweat and you're really warm. And then in the winter, you do your little cycle. You go out along the plateau, and that's really nice. And you turn round and you freewheel down, and you're not moving, and you're coming down into air that might be only just above freezing. And quite often by the end of that, I can't move my hands. You know what I mean? I can't brake. What's the solution to that? Because it just seems to be you're almost like cycling in two completely different environments.
Yeah, it is one of the biggest challenges with cycling. It's kind of layering is the first thing. I mean, anyone who's in the outdoors a lot, sort of, you know, you understand layering. You want a nice base layer next to skin that's going to wick away your sweat.
Yeah.
You know, like another mid layer, and then an outer layer that's going to kind of keep the elements off. But with cycling, you've got that kind of twofold problem. Like, you get really hot from the energy, and then you stop, and then you just cool down really quickly.
Yeah.
And part of that's the evaporation of the sweat and wind chill. Uh-huh. So what I find is that on days like that, I like to tuck like a really lightweight, thin, windproof jacket in my back pocket, so that when I get to the top of the hill, I can put that on over what I'm wearing and try and keep that heat in and keep the wind chill from getting to me on the descent. So that works really, really well. Like, I'd never leave the house any time of year, really, without a thin windproof top in my pocket. So that's the first thing I do. Like a buff as well, maybe pull that on over your head when you stop at the top and look at the view, keep your head warm. But your hands is a really tricky one, because going downhill, they're just taking the full brunt of that cold wind, and your hands don't really do anything anyway. They're just kind of holding the bars. So windproof winter gloves, cycling specific windproof winter gloves, are your best bet. And where you are, you've probably heard of a company called Endura in Livingston in Scotland, and they make cycling kit made for made for riders who ride all year round in Scottish winters. And
I'd not heard. Well, Livingston's quite away from me, I have to say. Endura. Okay. Okay.
And they are the winter gloves I rate most highly. They're really good.
And do you have do you use a saddlebag to keep all this, or do you just keep it? Or you just put it in your pockets? How do you do that?
Depends what I'm doing, where I'm going, how long I'm going out for. Like I'm quite an old school roadie who likes to stuff loads of stuff in my pockets.
Right. Okay.
It's like, you know, food, phone, windproof top. It's all there where you need it. I keep a saddle bag on my bike permanently that's got, you know, like an inner tube and stuff to fix basic mechanicals. Although one tip is to always check that they're still in there, they've not rusted solid or
yes.
that they're no use to you, because that often happens. But yeah, if it was on a mountain bike, I'd carry a bit more, you know, like the further you are from help, the more you need to carry, the more self-sufficient you need to be. So I probably have like a core thing that I carry on every ride and then adapt that on where I'm going and how long I'm going for.
Yeah, so so sort of a lightweight windproof top that you can fold away somewhere, but will nevertheless sort of stop you, will stop the wind chill, which is the major factor, obviously. So that's what you're advising. And also a wickable base layer that's going to take some of that sweat, I guess, away from your skin. Those seem to be the most important. What about your legs? Because I found, how can I put it? Well, what I try and do with my little daily cycles is that I say, no matter what the weather, I'm going to go. And then, because the hard thing I find is often getting out the door. And once you're out on the door on the bike, you're fine. But you look out the window, it's raining, it looks a bit miserable. And if I say to myself, oh, if the weather's too bad, I won't go, then I'll spend about 15 minutes or 20 minutes standing there wondering how bad the weather is. You know? So I say to myself, and to be quite honest, I've been doing these daily runs now for only about 6 weeks. But I always say to myself, I'm only doing about half an hour or something like that, you know? So if it's really bad weather, I'm never more than 15 minutes from home. And so that's not too bad, but I think the being determined to go is really the important thing. One of the trickiest conditions I found, you get frost and a bit of ice, and that really worries me. So I mostly ride on my mountain bike, so it'll handle slippery conditions to an extent. What would your advice be about coping with conditions like that?
Well, ice is a really difficult one, because it doesn't matter how skilled you are, how experienced you are. If you hit a bit of black ice and you're on kind of like ordinary tires, chances are you're going to come off. You know, it's like it doesn't matter how clever you are. You're going to slide on ice unless you've got yourself a set of ice tires. Now, they've got like little metal studs in them.
Oh, right. Okay.
They are brilliant. Like you could ride across, and I have actually done this, you can ride across a frozen lake on a proper ice tire, but they're only really worth that if you're going to be riding on
a lot
roads a lot. So ice is something that generally it's like, just avoid it if you can, you know. Ride your mountain bike on gravel tracks or on grassy tracks or somewhere away from ice and the road, and just try and stay off it. I mean, when I was younger and I was super keen and dedicated to like training for racing, I try and ride in all conditions. And really, it was luck, not judgment, that meant.
I mean, I sort of the problem is, well, as you know, with when you're cycling on tarmac, you can't always see the ice. So you don't even know it's. I did almost come off the other day when I had to stop for somebody, put my foot down, and my foot just kept going. I try, if I can, I don't know whether this works or not, but I try not to change direction and not to accelerate or decelerate. I just sort of freewheel through it. If I suddenly think, oh my God, this is icy, I just don't do anything.
I was thinking about this the other day, because I remember distinctly one morning I was out on my bike and I was coming downhill into a little dip that had a beck across the bottom and then shooting back up the other side. And as I started to descend into it, I realized that the whole of the road in the bottom, the beck had overflowed and then frozen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I remember that feeling of like, right, what am I going to do? And like you said, you can't brake because you're slide.
No,
you can't turn because you're slide.
Yeah.
So I just kind of like held my breath, held my nerve, and just went straight across it and up the other side. And it was, as I said, it was total luck, not judgment. But yeah, you're right. Don't do anything to change your direction or brake. But and just don't go anywhere near the stuff.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, to be quite honest, you've really reassured me, because it turns out that most of the things that have been happening to me happened to everybody else as well.
Yeah.
I just thought it was me, you know.
That's why it's really nice to meet other cyclists and, you know, join a cycling club or ride with your mates and things, because you get to chat about bike riding and you find out all these little tricks and tips that other people have got, and the things that you thought were a bit weird and were just happening to you, it turns out everyone else is experiencing similar stuff.
Oh, right. Great. Well, listen, it's been fantastic talking to you. Really interesting. And your book, 1001 Cycling Tips, sounds like it's quite a laugh as well, to be honest. So I think, and you've really opened my eyes to particularly to giving a fairly stern look to motorists who are behind me. So so listen, Hannah, thank you very much for coming on the show. And what I'll do is I'll put links to those websites that you talked about, Endura, Sustrans, and Commute, was it the other one, and on my web page. And I'm sure if anyone wants, if I haven't answered, if the answers to any questions that we've raised, or if people have got questions they want to ask that we've not answered, or maybe the book doesn't answer, I don't know, I'm sure they'd be happy to get in touch with me, and I'll see if I can find out. Hannah Reynolds, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. It's been fun. Thanks.